have to leave it right there. And if you are interested in getting that gift that was offered during this past half an hour for a pledge of $125, you can get that DVD of Amazing Grace, Aretha Franklin's Amazing Grace, by calling 212-209-2950 or go to give to WBAI.org online as a way of showing support to an institution that's been around solely supported by listeners like yourselves since 1960. 212-209-2950 or go to give to WBAI.org. Stay tuned for Ecologic coming up. It is now 2:31 p.m.
It whole again. I believe we can make it whole. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on polluting the earth and telling where we're gonna plant our seed, it makes me wanna cry for the children. Makes me wanna. We could know if we listen to the earth.
And clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. And this is Ecologic for March 4th, 2022.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
We are celebrating Connie Hogarth, a lifelong peace, justice, and environmental activist.
Our guests, Judy Allen and Charlie Shiner, will share their stories with us. Welcome to Ecologic. Judy, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Judy Allen. I live in Putnam Valley, New York. I became a Connie Hogarth fan in 1980 at an NRC meeting, and we became friends several years later, and we've been friends for the last 17 years or so.
And Charlie?
I'm Charlie Shiner. I currently live in Tarrytown, but when I moved back to Westchester in 1973, after going to college, I was sort of one of Connie's early young people that she mentored, and she mentored me for about 30 years, and then I learned a lot from her and continued to work with her for her whole life after that.
Tell us about Connie Hogarth. Charlie, you knew her first, so we'll start with you.
Well, I knew her actually when I was in high school. She was active in the Women's Strike for Peace and the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, which my mother was also active in the 1960s, opposing nuclear testing and then opposing the war in Vietnam and supporting the civil rights movement. But when I first started working with her was after I went to college and came back to White Plains, so it was 1973. And at that time, Westpac was a monthly meeting of it was literally a coalition, as you see in Westpac, still stands for coalition. It was a group of people that met every month in a church basement. And I was talking with Connie, and she said, can you make this into an actual organization with an office and a center and a staff and a place that people can come and work? And I said, yeah, I worked in a place like that where I was in New Haven before, and there are people doing it in Syracuse, and we should be able to do it here in Westchester. So in 1973, 1974, we set out to raise the money and to find a place and to fix up the place. It was a sort of abandoned loft above the Colony Theater in White Plains. And gathered people from what at that point was a sort of declining peace movement, because the bodies being killed in Vietnam were mostly not Americans anymore. The war was being Vietnamized, and Vietnamese people were being killed. And so all the local peace groups in each town were having trouble sustaining themselves. So we came together and formed this countywide group. And it was a merger of the Westchester Peace Council, which was these local peace groups, and then a group called the Mobilization for Domestic Unity that was working against Nixon's cuts in social services. So that from the beginning, Westpac had, well, I guess what's now called a multicultural aspect, and dealt with class issues as well as environmental and peace issues. And Connie was really the glue that held it together. She was the director from the beginning for the next 22 years. She called it an alternative to despair. That's why people should join Westpac, because you could be active and not just lament all the bad things that were happening in the world, but we could try to do something about it.
Judy, give us your thoughts.
So, as I was saying about the aforementioned MRC meeting, it was in 1980, and three of us New York out-of-work actors had just found out about Three Mile Island, which is the first time that we even knew about nuclear energy, because we were actors and we were a little self-absorbed. So we found out about Three Mile Island and decided to write a musical about nuclear energy. And so I had to do some research. I ended up going to this NRC meeting in Westchester, which was about transporting nuclear waste on the roads of Westchester. And NRC meetings are a legend for people falling asleep. They encourage you to fall asleep at those meetings by their delivery, which was just... So we were all falling asleep. And I was sitting next to the mic where an audience member was to get up and say something to the, and all of the people who were speaking were pretty much on their side. So anyway, finally, this brilliantly redheaded woman got up next to me and stood at the mic and yelled at them, "How can you sleep at night?" And that kind of woke everybody up. And that was Connie Hogarth. And so I became a fan, but I didn't actually meet her until, I guess, 20-something years later at the Beacon Sloop Club, when she had moved up to live in Beacon. And when IPSEC formed, the list of members of IPSEC, I didn't recognize anybody, but I did recognize the name Connie Hogarth. So when
IPSEC stands for?
I'm sorry, IPSEC, Indian Point Safe Energy Coalition. So when I saw her at the Sloop Club and recognized her, I went up to her and said, "You don't know me, but I think you're wonderful." And Connie, being who she was, recognized a fan instantly. And so she started asking me to do things for her at Manhattanville College. And I did, gladly. Helped her out at Manhattanville with a few events. And then at one point she asked me to join, be an assistant director. So I did that in 2011, and we did that for a few years and met some wonderful students and staff, and it was a really wonderful phenomenon, and I'm sorry that it is no longer. as I am sorry that Connie is.
I think that Judy's story illustrates one of the things that was Connie was excellent at and that she prioritized, which is movement building and bringing people in to a movement. I mean, I had a conversation the other day with a New York Times journalist who was writing an obituary about her. He was all about the protest, and he wanted to know what it was like on the day of the protest. And, you know, we talked about that, but then what I tried to explain to him, and I think the mainstream media is not very good at this, although BAI listeners do understand it, the protest is the culmination of weeks or months of work and years of outreach, of bringing people in, of helping people understand the issues. One of the groups that was at Westpac from the beginning was a group that a woman called Irene Dickinson, who's no longer with us, had called the Citizens Committee to Protect the Environment. And they did door-to-door canvassing about Indian Point starting around 1970, I think. So it was a very long struggle and a very long movement to bring people involved.
Yeah, I remember going to a meeting that Connie facilitated, and it was about Indian Point, and then she handed over the facilitation reins to Charlie Shiner, who is with us today. And one of the things that I remember from that is how she was involved in environmental justice before it was called that, before it was called environmental racism. She was bringing things together that, you know, like a lot of people, you know, we specialize, right? We're taught to specialize from the day we go to school. And Connie didn't. She showed how different things connected, how the peace issue connected with women's issues, connected with environmental issues, connected with labor issues, and on and on. And the way she explained it, it was the most obvious thing in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of people who went to those meetings, they're like, oh. And there was a lot of that, oh. And it sounded so matter-of-fact coming from Connie Hogarth. It was amazing to listen to.
It was almost a joke that in every meeting she would take 15, 20 minutes listing all the upcoming events on every different issue. And, I mean, she did it both to make the organizers of those events feel included and also to help people see what Ken was just talking about, that these issues are all connected. So she was involved in support for Cuba, for South Africa, against U.S. intervention in Central America and Palestine, on Indian Point, on racism, on economic justice, on repression. She was active in the National Rainbow Coalition supporting Jesse Jackson's campaign. She basically, this reporter asked, how could Westpac work on so many things? And I said, you know, at any given time, one or two issues would be primary. So from like 77 to 80 or 82, that the Indian Point and nuclear power were primary. But after that, it was the U.S. wars against El Salvador and Nicaragua. And, you know, it would change over time. Because Westpac, I mean, Connie was the glue that held it together and the core and the energy. But Westpac office often had five or six different people working at different desks working on different issues at the same time. And by sharing a space and sharing lunches, it created that kind of cross awareness that we're talking about.
And it's so interesting to see how this connecting of the dots that Connie was so amazing at happened over such a long period of time. We're talking about from the 60s to now, and our guests today represent a representative of a large swath of Connie's activist life. Charlie from the early days of Westpac, and Connie and Judy working with Connie in recent times.
I just saw a photo recently of a march I was on for a Fukushima commemoration or the shutdown when Indian Point lost its license there with Connie.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember about that history, that there are a lot of victories, right? Apartheid is over. U.S. military is not killing people in Central America. Until last week, we didn't have to worry about nuclear war anymore. Indian Point is shut down. Connie saw a lot of progress and a lot of success, even though at any given time it might seem that the odds are very much against us. And there's a new awareness in this country now about racism and police violence. A lot of the things that she worked on are, and the movements still go on, and there have been some victories and some defeats, and there's still a lot of work left to do. But, you know, I think what Connie would say in a lot of meetings and events, you know, Connie Hogarth presenting, she will be with us as we continue in these struggles.
Judy, tell us about the center.
Well, the Connie Hogarth Center for Social Action, I believe it started after Connie left Westpac in the mid-90s, like 1997. David Eisenhower, I believe, was teaching at Manhattanville College. And this is before my time, so I don't have the details. But he invited her to come and establish the center at Manhattanville. And she did, and she had some wonderful guests over many, many years. It was, if it started in around 1997, then it went for 15, 16 years until, well, basically till the pandemic basically shut Manhattanville down and everything else. And, but, you know, I remember, like, Father Michael Lapsley was one of the guests who spoke. There were so many people. Cecil, WEACT, you know, the organization WEACT?
Sure.
Cecil's his last name, I can't remember, and who unfortunately left us way too soon. But he, I remember he came, the police prop, P-R-O-P, the police. Okay, so there are so many unfair things in the world. And Connie took them all on and brought people to Manhattanville to talk to the students and anybody else who wanted to come. And for a long time, she was greatly appreciated. And very one of the things that stands out in my memory was after Fukushima, the year after that, we had a first anniversary event at Manhattanville that several people spoke at, and the room was filled to the brim with a lot of people who came to find out what the effects of Fukushima and our own nuclear issues here were.
Yes, a true warrior woman. Connie is a total example, and for everyone. And Charlie, I know you talked about Connie as being a mentor for you, as well as a co-founder of Westpac.
Yeah, I mean, Connie was a mentor for many, many people. I mean, I think that's why she established the Connie Hogarth Center in Manhattanville after she left Westpac. A lot of the students who were part of the center or even were employed by the center have gone on and continued to do all kinds of activist works. I mean, my path is probably not very typical, but a couple of years after Connie left Westpac, retired from Westpac, well, she thought retired, but then she found another career. I moved to Timor-Leste and worked to support the New Nation. Many people think it's called East Timor. As it became an independent nation, I was supporting it here before. And Westpac was a place that I could work out of with the East Timor Action Network. So, you know, for the first few years, I was the youngest person in Westpac meetings. And then for the last few years, I was the oldest person in Westpac meetings.
It's a different perspective.
When Westpac started, we grew on the people, I guess, who had mentored Connie, the people who had been activists in the 30s and 40s. We had several veterans with Abraham Lincoln today that were involved.
Mm.
You know, and as they gradually got old and passed on, then another generation of people got involved, and then another generation, and another generation. And all of those people, the people who were interns or the people who were volunteers there, continued to do the kind of work that they were doing at Westpac, but they did it in other places. And I think that the lesson that I learned most from Connie was fundamental principle of nonviolence and nonviolence civil disobedience, which we did a lot of and did a lot of training for, which is that no person is unreachable. And every human being has a basically good character, and no matter what they wear, they're playing right now, if they're an arms manufacturer or a police officer or whatever, you can still try to talk to them and persuade them and value their humanity. And I think if we want to remember one message from Connie's life, I think that's probably the message that you would want us to remember.
And Judy?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of people who are wanting to memorialize Connie and honor her and her legacy. And what Connie would say is, if you really want to memorialize me, get out there and do something. Call your congressman. Go to a meeting. Just get out there. And as Marilyn Ellie would say, it doesn't matter what you do, but do something.
Thank you.
As usual, the time flies by and we need to wrap it up. But thanks for joining us. For more information on Connie Hogarth, you can contact Westpac.org. That's WESPAC.org. No T in Westpac.
And join us next week on Friday, March 11th, for a live report from the Indian Point commemoration of the 11th anniversary of the start of the Fukushima disaster.
We have information on a variety of environmental topics, or you can listen to this show or any of our past shows. It's all on www.ecoradio.org.
That's www.ecoradio.org.
Mainstream media will barely cover activists like Connie Hogarth. They will not take the time to talk in depth with those who worked with them. Their corporate profit interests will never highlight the real superstars. That's why Ecologic and WBAI are so important. We need to exist.
It's you, the listener, who has the power to keep Ecologic on the air. Help us to continue to bring you important news, information, and entertainment. Radio might seem free, but there are costs, and our listener-supported radio station needs you.
WBAI is celebrating Women's History Month, and Connie Hogarth is certainly a powerful woman worthy of being lauded at this time. Ecologic and WBAI are in need of your support to continue to exist. Please consider becoming a BAI buddy with a monthly pledge. We really appreciate and need your support.
Go to www.givetowbai.org and choose Ecologic on the drop-down menu after you click Next. Or call 212-209-2950 and say that you want to be a member or a BAI buddy. Or put Eco-Logic in the search box and see the environmental DVDs and CDs that are available for a donation to WBAI.
Like so many producers here at WBAI, we are volunteers and work hard every week to bring you new information and guests who are on the front lines of many environmental issues. Pledging now during this show really helps Ecologic especially.
Also, those of you online, please sign up for our email list to stay connected with us. Those of you on social media, search for Eco-Logic.
We just heard that Sims Municipal Recycling has been acquired by investors. They're the biggest municipal recycling facility on the continent. There's more on our website, www.ecoradio.org.
And when the Zoom portion of this tribute to Connie Hogarth is put on the internet, we'll let you know. Hey, and thanks to our terrific engineer, Reggie Johnson. We couldn't do this without you. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. Join us March 11th for the Fukushima commemoration.
Celebrate each day's rebirth. So
solar power, inexpensive energy. So
for WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York. I'm Chris Bangert Drowns with some brief news headlines. At least 57 people were killed and nearly 200 were injured by a suicide bombing at a Shiite mosque in the northwestern Pakistani city of Peshawar today. The attack is one of the deadliest in years in Peshawar. Pakistan's Shiite minority has long been targeted by Sunni militants, but no group has yet claimed responsibility for today's attack. Pakistani authorities say the attack was likely carried out by the region's Islamic State affiliate. Prime Minister Imran Khan condemned the attack. Russian citizens continue to speak out against their country's invasion of neighboring Ukraine, in spite of a heavy-handed crackdown by Moscow. More than 8,000 people have been arrested at anti-war protests as of yesterday, according to the organization OVD Info. Several Russian oligarchs have also voiced opposition to the invasion. The anti-war sentiment comes amid a crackdown on media outlets by Kremlin authorities. Russia's top independent radio station was closed down yesterday, and the country's top independent TV station suspended operations after receiving a threat of closure. Russia has restricted access to social media sites and instructed local media outlets to remove reports describing the violence in Ukraine as an assault, invasion, or war. Today, Russia prevented access to Facebook, claiming the network has engaged in, quote, discrimination against Russian news media, end quote. This afternoon, the UN Security Council opened an emergency meeting after Russian forces in Ukraine attacked and seized Europe's largest nuclear power plant. UN Political Affairs Chief Rosemary DiCarlo told the Security Council, quote, attacks on nuclear power facilities are contrary to international humanitarian law. Every effort should be taken to avoid a catastrophic nuclear incident, end quote. A fire broke out in a training building outside the plant early today after shelling by Russian forces. After burning for at least 4 hours, the fire was extinguished. According to the International Atomic Energy Agency, the fire did not affect essential equipment, and there has been no increase in radiation levels. The IAEA also reports that Russia now occupies and is in control of that facility. Following a second round of talks yesterday, Ukraine and Russia have agreed to temporary local ceasefires to create safe zones so that civilians can be evacuated and food and medicine can be delivered. The so-called humanitarian corridors were defined by the United Nations in 1990 as an important instrument to back up the right of civilians to receive assistance during armed conflicts. Yesterday's talks failed to reach any agreement to a larger ceasefire, and it remains unclear where and when the humanitarian corridors will be established. Human Rights Watch today denounced unequal treatment and delays as people attempt to flee the war in Ukraine. The organization interviewed foreign nationals from North African countries, sub-Saharan African countries, and India at the Polish border, and found a pattern of blocking or delaying foreigners from boarding buses and trains. Judith Sunderland, Associate Director for Human Rights Watch's Europe and Central Asia Division, said, quote, it's a harrowing situation for everyone trying to get out of harm's way, and everyone escaping the war, no matter where they come from, should be allowed to leave, end quote. More than 1.2 million people have fled Ukraine into neighboring countries since Russia launched its invasion, according to United Nations figures. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 44 degrees and partly cloudy. In New York City, 35 degrees with fair skies. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bangert Drowns. Thanks for listening.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. The previous program was Ecologic, which is